Hi, Bobby Halton here for Unimac. Now, Unimac knows there's no price that you can put on a life, including ours. Being proactive with our health and safety is non-negotiable. To protect us against cancer-causing carcinogens, we need more than just clean gear. You need a total solution with the best equipment, the best technology, and the best training. That's why the good folks at Unimac partnered with an NFPA-authorized independent service provider to offer certified training on NFPA 1851 standards. When it comes to keeping us safe and healthy, demand the total package. Get training details at unimac.com/safety. That's unimac.com/safety.
Good evening. This is Pete Prokilo with Fire Engineering, and I'm here today on the podcast to be talking with Ed Ballum, who is the senior editor of Fire Apparatus and Emergency Equipment magazine. This is actually Ed's second stint with the magazine, where he was working as the managing director. I think it was from 96 to 2009. Right now he's taking over the reins for Chris McClune, who left us early in the year. And so we're just going to be talking a little bit about the magazine, Ed's new role, where the fire service industry is going, especially in terms of apparatus and anything else like that. So Ed, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You're with the an assistant chief in Haverhill Corners, correct?
Yes. Yes. Thanks, Pete, for having me today. So, yeah, I'm Ed Ballum. I am assistant chief in Haverhill Corner, New Hampshire, which is up in the northern part of the state. I'm an EMT and been a firefighter with this department for about 20 years, plus or minus. So I kind of come from a firefighting background, if you will. My father was a chief when I was a kid back in Dunbarton, New Hampshire, which is in the southern part of New Hampshire state. And he was in this late 60s, early 70s. So I kind of grew up in the fire station and kind of an interesting life with if I wanted to see my father, I'd have to go down and hang out at the fire station there for Saturday mornings. So we lived about 3 miles from the fire station. So it was a good bike ride, but it was still fun. So I hung out at the fire station quite a long time doing that. I think he was chief for about 10 years, plus or minus. So it was one of those kind of things where it kind of sort of came naturally. And as it turns out, my son now is an EMT himself. So I guess we're kind of third generation now of first responders. So it's a kind of all in the family. And it's been interesting, even though I haven't been necessarily a firefighter for 40 years, I've been sort of around it for about that long, or maybe even a little bit longer than that. So a lot of changes during that time for certain. So I recall when I was a kid, one of the things that happened a lot is a conversion to military vehicles. They'd literally take 6x6s, Army 6x6s, GMCs, and make tankers out of them and, you know, put big homemade tankers on them, or sometimes even in dairy tanks or even old fuel trucks and convert them, which today is kind of frowned upon a little bit, but yeah, it was something that was done quite often back in those days. In fact, it was I'm probably long out of service by now, but it's there was at least two that my father had and I had built when I was a kid. So it was kind of interesting to see that. So
homemade rigs, huh?
Homemade rigs. That's exactly what they were. Yeah. Retired military rigs, and they worked pretty well. I mean, rural New Hampshire. I mean, the town I grew up in had less than 600 people in it. So you can imagine the tax rate, you know, there wasn't a lot of money there to buy apparatus. And I don't think in all the time I was there, I grew up there and there was never a new apparatus. There are some there now, obviously, but back when 60s and 70s through to 1980, about there was nothing there for that. So, but the, a little bit more about me, I've been a, writer, reporter for my entire career, newspapers, and I was with Fire Apparatus Magazine in 96 my name appeared in the second edition. I missed the first one just by a month or two, but in back in 96, it was founded, or actually a little before that, founded by Peter Jurgensen, who is a name that many people will remember. Pete died, I think it was 2006, and he had it for that time. So he brought it up from, it started out as a more or less a shopper, if you will, for used apparatus out of Long Island. FireTech is when it was connected with, and it was a magazine that actually was meant as a vehicle to sell broker trucks, used trucks. And Pete had the idea, let's make it be a magazine. Let's have it be more about trucks and new trucks and equipment that go on it. And so that's what it kind of started out as. And it lasted like that for a good long time. I was trying to think, Chris McClune asked me a while back when it went to fire apparatus and emergency equipment. That was done deliberately to sort of be more inclusive. We had a number of people that were interested in other things that were on the trucks, and including nozzles and hoses and, you know, breathing apparatus and other things that firefighters would use. It's always been about trucks and stuff. And I know that's kind of a broad subject, but it's an avenue that we've actually pursued for quite a long time. In 2006, Pete sold it to the predecessor of Clarion Events. He sold it to Penwell, and Penwell has since become Clarion Events. And right after that, I went to a competing trade publication in the fire service and worked there for about 10 years. So some of you may remember what that was, but I'll leave that to others.
We're going
to
bleep it out. Yeah.
I didn't say it.
No, it's not a problem. Listen, it's cool.
Yeah. So, and back in December, the Eric Schlett called me up and said Chris was leaving, and I was kind of surprised and honored that that Eric would call me back and remember that I had this stint, and it worked out, and I ended up taking a job, and I started February 8th of this year. And it's interesting how it's kind of like a old home day. I recognize a lot of the writers we had, like Chief Marinucci, Rich Marinucci, and Raul Angulo. He was writing for me as well. And there's even Ron Heal. I remember when I actually hired Ron Heal. He's the person that does the apparatus showcase. Ron's a great guy, and all the writers we have are great, great people, very knowledgeable. They represent the company well, and it's a pleasure and honor to be back with those folks, continuing on with the magazine and making it, growing it, in a matter of fact. So,
yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about how that has grown in the past. Like you said, it added in the equipment angle. It's also a bit of a buff kind of mag, right? A little bit. Would you say
somewhat? Yeah, we've always tried to be about trucks and stuff. Back when it was more of a shopper, where we literally had a lot of vehicles for sale, it had a pretty big buff following, because people would like to look at the antique trucks and they'd like to check out what they may or may not be able to buy. And I mean, face it, I think that anybody's in the fire service always dreams about having their own truck in some cases. So this is kind of a way for buffs to sort of dream, at least. We've kind of shed that a little bit. There's not so much of that. I think there's really hardly any of it anymore at all, used apparatus. But that was the roots. So certainly there was some buff to it. And I recall when I used to take it, even now to a certain extent, when I first took them to my fire station, my chief at the time said, Ed, would you please stop bringing those magazines to meetings? They're just distracting, because they'd be flipping through the pages, looking at all the trucks and looking at all the ones for sale. Oh, look at that one. Can we get that one, chief? It's like, put the magazines away, guys, you know. So I'd bring, you know, 5 or 10 copies and throw them around the meeting room. So there's always been an element of that a little bit. But frankly, we've always tried to be more involved with people that were decision-making and buying things. You know, we want to give good, solid information about apparatus, who builds them, what's available, what's new, innovations in the equipment that we use every day. There are things that that this, face it, these things save lives and people depend on them for that kind of thing. You have to have reliable apparatus and reliable equipment that's good quality to do the job that firefighters do and first responders do. Even EMT, which I'm an EMT as well, you've got to have good medical gear. You've got reliable ambulances. There's nothing worse than a broken down ambulance where you've got a patient in the back or a fire truck that develops mechanical issues and the transmission blows on the way to a fire scene. Not good for anybody. So we try to make sure that people understand that, that these are some of the new innovations and this is the new products that are out there and a little bit even about the people that make it. One of the things we've always done is sort of do manufacturers' profiles where I think a lot of companies, people are interested in kind of behind the scenes kind of stuff. They've always want to know how things are built and how things are made. And we've always sort of tried to do that. Even now, Bill Adams does manufacturers' profiles on a pretty routine basis. In fact, we'll be having one coming up here in a little bit in the future issues. And you get to know a little bit more about the people that are actually making the equipment and how it's made. And
well, in a lot of cases, they're firefighters, right? A lot of cases, you have members of the fire service. And I think that instinct to learn about the job is something that is pervasive, you know, for people who have that interest.
Yeah, indeed. And as you're right, Pete, there's a lot of people out there that manufacture stuff that are firefighters. So when you sit down and talk about the specs on a new apparatus, you're talking to somebody that may know a thing or two about the fire trucks. And by having manufacturers' profiles, you have a chance to listen to those people and hear what they say. And they've been at it for a while and they have an idea of how it's being used and they can make recommendations often. So there's a lot of trust in the fire service about how things you have to. It's an old saying, and I don't necessarily subscribe to it 100%, but it takes one to know one. Firefighters interact with each other. It's better than sometimes non-firefighters. There's lingo and jargon, and there's things that, that make a difference in our daily lives. You say a pre-connect, and some people might say, what's a pre-connect? Pre-connecting what? You plugged in your air conditioning first, or what? But there's all kinds of things like that, or, you know, pressure governors or friction loss or SCBAs in the seats. I mean, there's a number of things that, that normal people don't speak these kind of languages. So,
yeah. And I guess, you know, the shared experience of the fire service, you know, if you have people making this stuff who know the job, they're going to make decisions that are, you know,
indeed,
you know, based on their lived experience. So what in terms of what's different this time around for you in terms of what you're seeing in the industry? Is there, you know, I know that we had Bill Carey of Firefighter Nation. He was out in D.C. the other week peeping at the new Rosenbauer electric rig that they had rolling through Maryland. So, yes. You know, obviously there's things such as that, you know, clean cab concepts, stuff like that. What are you noticing?
Certainly those two things. Clean cab is very, very important right now and very hot. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think it's long overdue. I think there's been, I can't say negligence, but it almost is, or ignorance is a better word perhaps. What you don't know doesn't hurt you, but in this case it does. Nanoparticles and things, carcinogens that we never thought about. There's always been a talk about legacy materials, wool and wood and things like that. Those always have their endemic and indigenous kinds of hazards, and there's always going to be smoke, and smoke is always going to be bad for you. But when you get new things that are plastic and man-made things and polyphenols and all that kind of good stuff, all the bad methyl little bad stuff is what I call it. So when that stuff burns, it gives, and it becomes aerosolized or becomes, you know, friable, and nanoparticles are everywhere. They can be on your clothing. They can be in your cabs, and you don't want to be spreading around the nanoparticles and things like that. And you don't want to subject yourself to carcinogens. So keeping your cab clean is a good thing. Keeping surfaces that are easily maintained is a good thing. Wiping it down, hosing it out in some cases. If it's that, if you've got a severe duty, you can even hose it out. I think we had one of our writers here recently, Robert Totoro, was mentioning what is actually a clean cab or what is clean. And technically, probably the only time that anything's ever really clean is when it's right out of the box in the factory or right off the assembly line after it's gone through final inspection and detailed and in the showroom. So after that is you have to manage it after that. You can never make it be 100%, but certainly you can do better than what we have been. You know, Joe Q firefighter jumping in the back without even being initially deconned, and you really can't say decontaminated, but at least hosed off and all the bad stuff is off of them to some gross decontamination. So we weren't even doing that as few as even 5 years ago. I mean, probably even some places not even doing it now, but certainly clean cab is something that we need to really keep an eye on. And it's something that will, as we learn more about these carcinogens and the things they do to our bodies, we'll have to be more vigilant in keeping them out, keeping them away from ourselves so we don't expose ourselves to carcinogens. And on a likewise thing, even the electric vehicles are sort of in the same vein of trying to keep our environment clean. You know, apparatus, even though they have a lot of afterburners and after death fluid and all kinds of emissions controls, they still make smoke. They still make release particulates. Diesel engines are always going to do that. It's endemic to the engine. So if we really care about things, it's not a bad idea to start thinking about electric. Because in urban areas, they have too much pollution now. I mean, the world is going towards electric more and more. I think that electric is a great concept at the moment. I'm glad that they're working on it. It's probably got a ways to go yet before we actually see it rolling around on the streets. I'm very glad that there are manufacturers like Rosenbauer that are actually taking initiative to do it, because the only way we're going to know about how this is really going to work is if we put them out in the field and out in the real world and say, hey, is this going to work? Is this robust enough? Are we going to be able to pump? What happens if the battery goes dead and you're in the middle of a 3-alarm fire where you're pumping water to beat the pan? It's one of those things we really kind of have to keep an eye on and learn more about as we go through the electric vehicles.
It's a place for them, I'm somebody sure. Putting together their own homemade rig kind of thing. No. It's that trial and error, I guess, right? To see.
Indeed. Battery technology is going to get better as we go. It's going to. It just will. And as we get better with batteries, I think you're going to find a more robust trucks and they'll be able to last longer. And that's always, I think, there's a saying that goes in the fire service, 200 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. So if we don't take a couple of steps forward at the very least to even just think about things, we're going to be stuck in the past. And that's not something we ever want to do. I've also heard something that firefighters hate two things. They hate staying where they are and they hate progress and change. So we're sort of a fickle group. But I do believe there is a place and time for electric vehicles, and it's coming sooner than later.
Well, and I think the concerns about all these changes are inevitably the ones that I've heard anyway are just, you know, how will they impact operations? You know, whether it's both the clean cab thing or electric, apparatus, and we'll have to just see how that, pans out in the real world, right?
Yes. There's a many people recognize Alan Brunicini, a fire chief from Arizona. He was one of the first advocates that say, get the SCBAs out of the back of the trucks. He had different reasons for it, but I think it was still the same thinking. It was for the safety of the firefighters, and getting SCBAs out of the trucks will not only make them cleaner, but it also give firefighters a couple of minutes to even take a beat, you know, look at the scene, look at what they're going into, take a look around. He often said, it's like an alien abduction. You drive on the scene, the next thing you know, boom, the door is open, everybody's gone. And so, wait a minute, the commanding officer said, hey, we don't have a plan of attack yet, guys. And they're headed to the, you know, the burning structure. And it's like, well, wait a minute. But if the SCBA is in the back of the cab or in a cabinet on the side, they're going to necessarily have to take a minute. They're going to be there. They're obviously going to be looking at the building unless, that's what they're going to be doing. Give them a few minutes to process stuff. So there's some good that can come out of that anyway. So operationally, there used to be a time when they used to say, get your SCBA on in a minute. And if you couldn't do that, forget it. You're washed up as a firefighter. Well, they've changed that thinking now to get it on and be safe. Don't leave exposed. Don't leave the back of your neck exposed. Don't leave the tips of your ears out because you want to feel the fire. Be more proactive about protecting yourself. So if that means taking time to put on your SCBA and all your turnout gear properly, great. And if it's outside the cab, you're supposed to be belted inside anyway. So you almost have to be a contortionist to get your SCBA on with the seatbelt on. I don't think anybody can do that very well. So the way that technology is today, the minute you take your seatbelt off, the alarms are going off. You get red lights flashing and buzzers going, and the driver is saying, who's unbuttoned? And they're looking up and seeing the screen that says, oh, there goes Lieutenant Smith. He's got his belt off. So, there's something to be said about keeping in your seat belted. Arrive safe. Just arrive alive. Don't become part of the problem. Don't be whacking your head because somebody stopped short. Keep belts on. So if that means taking the SCBAs out in the name of clean cab, there's other benefits too. So that certainly can be that way. And operationally for electric vehicles, I think we've always heard about, is it going to be robust enough to pump water? We all have our electric drills and battery operated drivers and skill saws and things like that. We know what they can do and we know what they used to be able to do. They're a lot better than they were even a year ago. They're 12 volts, 24 volts now, and the voltages are going up and their robustness is really progressing quite amazingly. So operationally, once it gets proven, firefighters want to know it's going to work. And if it's proven that it works and say, okay, yeah, I just went to this structure fire and the battery never failed. I never had trouble. I was able to pump and do everything I needed to do. Great. Then it's proven. So you're right. But operationally, I think it needs to be proven before it actually gets accepted. I think that's the way it is in a lot of industries.
And so are you looking forward to anything in particular? I know FDIC is coming up now, August 2nd through the 7th. Yes. You'll be out there. Yes. Are you anticipating any major, unveilings or anything of that nature? I know it's kind of going to be a different year with the COVID situation, but, what are you looking forward to, if anything, out there?
I've always looked forward to FDIC. It's always a great time to get together with like-minded people and see old friends and frankly see new stuff. It's always been, it's the definitive show of the nation and one in the world, frankly. And it's always been known as the place where people unveil things. Obviously with COVID, things have been changed. We didn't have one last year. FDIC didn't happen in 2020. So a lot of those unveilings ended up getting delayed or just announced other ways, either through FDIC product networks or some other venues. And we've tried to, Clarion Events has tried to take care of some of those things and, as best they can and make it be newsworthy and truly give it the coverage it deserves. So this year at FDIC, I'm certain there'll be something that's unveiled. I've been amazed at the amount of technology. It's just exponential, the technology that comes on board. Every year, there's something new, some whiz-bang things, whether it's a new thermal imaging camera or there's a new pump controls that are digitized and touch screens, or I recall even when aerials first had their wireless booms, that was pretty amazing. The monitors, water monitors on top of the apparatus, wireless, and you stand there with like joysticks and you're controlling everything. So it's almost like George Jetson time here in some cases. So I kind of expect to see more of that. And I don't want to date myself too much, but kids these days are coming up with a lot more new stuff, newfangled stuff. Innovation is always going to drive the fire service. I know that kind of runs counter to my saying about, 200 years of tradition unencumbered by progress. But the fact is that there are younger people coming up, 20, 30 year old people that are indigenous to a lot of this electronic stuff. If it doesn't have a joystick, they may not know how to run it, frankly. Or if it doesn't have Wi-Fi capabilities or can't be, Bluetooth, they have no idea what it is. I mean, if you talk about analog, or I'll really date myself and say like a vernier caliper on a pump panel, which is a throttle that you actually have to turn, that had a cable that manually made the engine, accelerate. Those days are gone. Everything is fly by wire now. And so I suspect that as we move forward, that we'll see more and more of that. Electronics and innovation is always going to be part of this service, the fire service. And so my thoughts are that I'll be walking the show floor come August, and I'll see something that'll stop me dead in my tracks and say, wow, I've never seen that before. And that's part of the beauty of FDIC. I bet any amount of money that if you walk through the aisles of FDIC, the show floor, you will inevitably be stopped dead in your tracks and say, wow, that's new. So that's one of the beauties of FDIC. They always see something new. So to predict exactly what I'll see, I have no idea. But I will predict, I will be surprised by at least a few things, always.
Here, I was going to kind of circle back. So are you seeing anything then with the volunteer fire service developments in your area? It's more rural, I guess, or?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, what we see with volunteers is there are fewer and fewer of them. And it's troubling for me to hear that and feel that, because people these days are more pressed for time than ever. They have so many competing things. Training requirements are getting steeper as people join the fire service. We require more of them to be certified, or at least somehow interior experienced, get some level of training where they can be safe and proficient on the fire scene. And when you talk about volunteers, it's hard. People have lives, they have kids, they have second jobs, they have recreation things they want to do. And being a volunteer is no longer the only show in town. There are other things that people can do these days. I know when my father was a fire chief back in the 60s, that was a big deal. That was one of the things that guys did, but today there are more options. So my hope is that as we can show by example that there is value to being a volunteer, there are many places in rural America, that's what they count on, because they can't afford to hire full-time career firefighters. And the career firefighters and the volunteers are just as professional as the next guy. The levels of training and the experiences they have, professional and on-call, are just words. Volunteers are not amateurs by any stretch of imagination. They're incredibly dedicated and they're incredibly trained. And we rely on volunteers a lot in the United States for our fire service. Career guys are great, and sometimes they'll do dual duty. They'll have they'll be going off to the big city for their own career paying job, and they'll volunteer in their hometown. And they'll wear both hats, exactly. So it's great to see that. And for my own department, I wish we had more. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that. And I don't think there's a firefighter in the volunteer situation that wouldn't say that. We want more. We want younger people. And I think that's a mantra that you'll see and hear from anybody in the fire service: more and younger volunteers, always.
Well, Ed, I just wanted to thank you for spending some time with us today.
Always.
To talk
yes,
about
thank
the,
you.
Not only your new position, but also the magazine, and what we should be looking forward to?
Yeah, I guess I could say I have kind of a dream job. You know, I've got, as a firefighter, what more? I mean, it's like, what's the old saying? If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. So I can say that this second time around is going to be even sweeter, because I'll have a chance to do more and I'll get to see some old friends and make some new ones. So it's a great opportunity. And I'm very pleased that Clarion Events reached out and let me do a second act here as well. So I appreciate being able to talk about it as well. It's something that I could do all day, I suppose, you know, talk about fire service, and it's kind of a passion. And thank you, Peter, for letting me do that and just kind of ramble on.
Not at all, Ed. Well, thanks to everybody listening, and we'll catch you tomorrow on the podcast.
Thank you, Peter.